host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Hello and welcome to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, or you might be listening in Kamloops at CFBX, or in Nova Scotia at Axe Radio Canada, or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And as always, wherever you're listening from, thanks for joining us today. Today we're going to be speaking with Peter Canova. He is an author of a fabulous novel. But before we bring him up, I will do an intro for him. But I have something to say, and it's going to piss off a lot of feminists. So I apologize. No, I don't apologize. I'm just going to say it. I'm looking at this 1 billion rising, strike, dance, and rise. Vancouver is rising against violence against women. Against. And I just love that there are a billion people coming together on this planet, men and women, for the cause, with the intention of wanting women to be safe and protected and respected and loved and cared for. And yet they're fighting against it. They're taking all of this energy and movement and dance and passion, and they're putting it towards the fight against violence. And I just want to say, you can't teach people to love you through hate. When are we going to stop this? I'm not against the concept. I definitely want women to be safe and respected, and for every woman to have enough food to eat and to not have to sell her body in the streets to support her family. But I just feel like the pushing against is just so counterproductive. It upsets me. And so I know that there are going to be a lot of people who are just going to hear, oh, she's against women and she's against this. No, I'm not. I'm for women and I'm for men and I'm for partnership and love and connection. And so that's just my little rant for the day. So happy freaking Valentine's Day to everybody. And we're going to bring Peter Canova up on the air. He's probably sitting there going, what am I getting myself into right now on hold? So for the past 30 years, Peter Canova has traveled the world researching mainstream and alternative religious and spiritual studies, along with quantum physics. And he's considered one of America's foremost authorities on the secret teachings of the Gnostic Gospels and the sacred feminine. And he's also the acclaimed author of the newly released spiritual thriller, Pope Annalisa, which is the book we're going to be talking today. And it's the winner of 9 awards, including the Nautilus Gold Award for Visionary Fiction, which formerly was bestowed on such authors as Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, and of course, the Dalai Lama. And the executive producers of the Academy Award-winning movie Black Swan have signed a deal with Peter to produce a film adaptation of Pope Annalisa. And he is a nationally sought after and dynamic speaker who's been all over, and he's spoken at the Global Alliance for Transformational Entertainment, as well as at the Unity Annual National Conference last year. So we're going to bring him up without further ado. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Good afternoon, Marie. Nice to be with you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So let's talk about the book. Now, I actually haven't finished reading the book because I had a huge novel. I don't usually do fiction on this show, and I had a huge novel last week, so I haven't gotten to this one yet. But it definitely seems like a page-turner. I read the first couple chapters, and it's already getting pretty juicy. So can you give us a little summary of what Pope Annalisa is about, and also what your intention is, other than just entertainment? What do you want it to bring to the world?
Well, Pope Annalisa has really crossed a lot of lines of people who normally would read, let's say, self-help books or nonfiction books, really love the book. It's really a balance between a spiritual wisdom text and just a really good read, a real commercial thriller. And I call it a spiritual thriller. It's set in the near future. It's about the rise of an African nun to the papacy in the near future world that has a lot of sharp problems facing it, conflict between religions, radical Islam in the West, political and military rivalry over dwindling resources, clashes between different religious and scientific beliefs, the gulf between the seeming gulf, the apparent gulf between science and religion, all these things are really discussed in the book. And my hope really is that it's a book of reconciliation, that people can take what appear to be these dead-end kind of situations that we're locked into. You alluded to a little bit of that in your rant, which incidentally I actually enjoyed, and show them that there's another way, there's a third way out of this. And that third way really entails a marriage, a sacred marriage, between the advanced sciences like quantum physics and ancient spiritual texts, that when you examine those two together, and this is one of the things that kind of set me off in this career path was doing this, the parallels are so startling to see that these sages of 2,000 and 3,000 years ago were describing the most advanced theories of quantum physics in their own mythical and spiritual terms. So there's a abundant basis out there for people who look to show us that there's an unseen dimension to life, and there's really a way out of a lot of the dilemmas that we face in life. And that's what I hope to convey in the book.
Thank you so much. So I really want to get into a discussion, since I don't want to talk too much specifically about the book, because everyone needs to go out and
sure.
read it. And I'm definitely going to read it, because it is, I just like to be able to do it on my own time. but it's, so let's talk about how science and spirituality have kind of been at odds with each other. I mean, where do you think that happened? Because even last week we were talking about in the novel that last week's guests were talking about, they were saying, they suggested that humanity is actually on a cycle rather than, what's the word, where we just grow upwards.
Sort of spiral.
Like we had all this wisdom and then we lost it. We went into a dark age. And now we're relearning it again. And
yeah,
so
I can speak to actually all those situations. But well, first of all, let's distinguish when we talk about science, because there's what I call traditional materialistic science, and then there are the advanced sciences such as quantum physics. And there's a big difference between them. And quantum physics really is going to supplant the a lot of the belief system that was engendered by materialistic science. But materialist science really kind of arose with over a period of centuries, and you can cite several figures who were really kind of responsible for a lot of the worldview today, and that was Newton, Descartes, and Darwin. And Newton, of course, described the laws of physics. Descartes described a separation of mind and body, and Darwin described a physical evolution, which would lead one to believe that life is a result of physical processes and nothing more. And I call this materialist science because essentially if you add it all up together, the conclusions that people drew, not necessarily the beliefs of, like Newton himself was actually a spiritual man, he was a religious man, but the conclusions that people drew from their work were that life is a process, a bottom-up process of random collisions of particles and molecules and so forth, and somehow they built their way up to higher and more complex organisms, resulting in life, the human brain, our interrelations with the world, and so forth. So a feeling came into being after this scientific revolution that God is dead, that there was really a material cause for everything that happens in the world, and we started to see the rise, particularly in the Western world, of a more secular type of society. But now quantum physics comes along and turns everything upside down. And it's saying, well, you know, these things weren't necessarily correct. And I guess the best way to describe it is that Newton's laws of physics, for instance, are correct in their sphere, describing the macrocosmic or the large-scale interactions of material objects. But Newton had no way of knowing and didn't really understand that there was a whole subatomic world that lay beneath this reality, that caused this reality. So Newton was describing the tip of the iceberg, but he didn't really understand what lay below the waterline. So many wrong conclusions were drawn from Newtonian mechanics that are were being shown that the whole nature of reality has a lot to do with consciousness, and that consciousness really is the source of everything that is, and life is a top-down process that begins with consciousness and ends with physical existence. So, you know, Darwin actually Darwinism is full of holes. It should be a discredited theory, but unfortunately, it's still being taught by a lot of hardcore scientific materialists in the universities, and it still kind of holds sway there. But it's full of holes. I mean, there's no common ancestor that we descended from. The fossil record shows that. The fossil record shows just about everything that Darwin said was wrong. And the missing link will never be found because life didn't really happen the way that Darwin really kind of described it. So subtly and surely, quantum physics is turning the world of science upside down on its head, and it's, you know, really giving us a new paradigm of reality that is much closer to what the ancient spiritual sages were describing.
Well, Peter, it's interesting you talk about the tip of the iceberg, because we seem to do that not just with science, but with any topic. I mean, it's just natural for us when we learn one thing, it shapes our view of the world. And so we start behaving in ways that are in line with that belief. And it might be true, but it's only part of the puzzle. And then you learn later. I mean, this is true for relationships, it's true for science, spirituality. I mean, everyone is on a journey. So my question for you, and I don't know if you have an answer, but how do we get past this locking on to one belief and then forgetting that there's a whole world of possibilities out there that we have no ability to be aware of yet?
You know, you really have to keep an open mind. I tell everybody it's the difference between religion and spirituality. If you can imagine a highway, which is your spiritual growth, your spiritual journey in life, and along that highway there are way stations, bus stops in effect, or truck stops in effect, and as you check into each of these stops along the way, religion will say, hey, you know, we've got everything you need to know in this building. Punch your ticket here. Stay within these four walls, and you don't need to go anywhere else. But the spiritual person will keep an open mind and say, you know, I know there's something to be learned here. I'm going to take that, and I'm going to go on to the next way station. So you'd never mistake the signpost for the destination. These stops along the way are opportunities for learning knowledge and learning growth, but you sort of have to keep in mind that the truth is an unfolding process. The truth just doesn't come, you know, with trumpets and in its fullness and, you know, comes to revelation with most people. It's a gradual process of realization as we grow in wisdom and insight and so forth. So, you know, every truth that I feel in my mind that I have, I say to myself, you know, I'm gonna work with that, I'm gonna act with that, I'm gonna use that as my springboard to move forward, but I'm also gonna recognize that that's subject to change at any time because there could be a newer and higher truth out there. And, you know, ultimately we progress our way up the ladder of knowledge and truth and we get more of a hang of what life is really all about. But it's very important to keep an open mind and understand spiritual growth as a process, an open-ended process, not a closed process.
So I'm curious, that brings up the question of the ancient mystery schools. And yeah. I'm actually curious, I was kind of feeling like, well, wouldn't it be nice if we had a better base of knowledge growing up? But then on the one hand, isn't that maybe our individual responsibility to seek it out? I mean, do you feel like we should be teaching this stuff in schools, or do you think that it's still our responsibility to find it ourselves?
I think both. I think all of the above. Back in the, well, let's say ancient biblical times, there were still mystery schools around which had existed for thousands of years, and they were the repositories of light knowledge. They were, in effect, an Ivy League university of spiritual learning, and they didn't just accept anybody. You had to sort of go through a screening, and you had to demonstrate that you had the intellectual capacity, you had the maturity, you had the desire, and you had that kind of mindset that would allow you to absorb these sacred teachings. And these schools existed in every country and every land. They stretched from India all the way to the British Isles, and they were in communication with one another. And their whole purpose was to preserve the ancient wisdom of light, which had been handed down for thousands and thousands of years. We could maybe trace it back historically, maybe around 12,000 BC, the shamanic period, where people recognized that two worlds existed side by side, the world of the seen and the unseen, and the shamans were those who walked between the worlds and brought information back to this material plane in order to help people and for beneficial reasons. But, the whole wisdom could have gone way, way beyond that. Some people say Atlantis, Lemuria, but I'm trying to stay historical here. So, unfortunately, it was Orthodox Christianity and the Roman Empire, when it married the Roman Empire, that really kind of destroyed the so-called pagan mystery schools. And then we had the burning of the library at Alexandria and the Serapeum, where we lost a tremendous amount of spiritual knowledge. So this knowledge has been suppressed, it's been obscured, but it will never die because it's essentially buried in the human soul. So it's always going to emerge in one form or another. It will never go away.
Thank you. Well, it's time for a break, so we will be back with more synchronicity in a moment. Right now, we are speaking with Peter Canova. He is the author of Pope Annalisa, which is the winner of 9 awards, including the Nautilus Gold Award for Visionary Fiction. And you can find him at popeannalisa.com. That's ANNALISA.com. Popeannalisa.com. And we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
Born in Nova Scotia in 1911, mezzo-soprano Portia White is considered to be one of the greatest concert singers of all time. She took voice lessons at the Halifax Conservatory of Music and began singing on radio broadcasts hosted by her father in the 1930s. She established renown by competing in the Halifax Music Festival, winning the Helen Kennedy Silver Cup on 3 occasions. Her official debut came at age 30 in Toronto's Eaton Auditorium. She gained acclaim across North America following a performance at Town Hall, New York, setting off a successful tour of Canada and the U.S. She finished her career primarily as a vocal teacher, performing her final concert in Ottawa in July 1967. Next up is a clip from the only official recording of Portia's music, entitled Where the Roses Never Fade.
This PSA was brought to you in support of Black History Month on CITR 101.9 FM.
March 2nd to the 23rd, the 2013 Vancouver International Dance Festival invites you to experience the kinetic simulation of contemporary dance. Delivered to you on stages throughout Vancouver by outstanding dance artists from New Zealand, Denmark, Switzerland, Zimbabwe, Mexico, Malaysia, Korea, Montreal, and Vancouver. Information and tickets are available online at www.vidf.ca or through our box office at 604-662-4966.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. And it is Valentine's week, so I just want to send you some love today. And it's also Family Day here in BC, in Canada. It's the first Family Day ever in BC. So I want to send love out to all of the families out there as well. And we are speaking with Peter Canova. He is the author of Pope Annalisa. You can find that at popeannalisa.com. Welcome back to the show, Peter.
Thank you.
So I'm curious about the mystery schools, because I would never probably be able to get in, because I definitely have too much ego and I don't meditate enough. So I would really like to know more. And I'm curious, like, how deep do you get into what goes on in these mystery schools in your book, Pope Annalisa?
Well, I do get into it. And let's talk a little bit about that right now, because this has to do with the ancient universal spiritual tradition. And I call it a universal tradition because the threads of this spiritual wisdom are present in just about every major culture in the world, from Asia to Europe to Africa to the Americas. And the reason why they have these common threads is, again, is because you have seers who are able to penetrate another dimension and bring back spiritual truth and spiritual wisdom. And they were able to do this in different parts of the globe in different epochs of history with an amazing correlation of information. So let's just talk about a couple of the principles which they would have taught in these mystery schools. The first thing would be that there is one consciousness, one spirit, one energy or substance that you can call God or anything you want that makes up the whole universe. This one energy or consciousness is the underlying basis of everything that is. And light energy is the medium by which this consciousness expresses itself. And this light energy broke itself up, in effect, into many different points of light or many different points of consciousness over different dimensions of existence, so that you went from one or a whole to a multiplicity of conscious beings. And
can I interrupt you for a second just so I can
sure.
understand? So are you talking about like the light energy, like when you turn on a light bulb and then it being broken apart, like when it goes like a rainbow through a prism?
Well, it's related, but it's a related light energy, but the energies that we experience in this dimension are watered down energies, because the light energy that I'm speaking of is an intelligent light energy. It actually contains directive information in it. It is like a radar that guides a ship along a particular course, and it informs this entire material world, and it's responsible for the forms and the substance that we see in this material world. And this is completely in concert with what quantum physics is telling us, because quantum physics says that at the most fundamental level of reality, there are no such things as particles. Now think of that for a second. Knock on a table, that solid, you know, sound that you have there. We were all taught that, well, that's because particles and molecules and atoms make up our world. But below that, at a deeper level, there are no particles. There are only waves of light energy, which are waves of possibility. All possible things can come out of those waves of light. And this really startled scientists when they first found this. And then along comes Albert Einstein, and he proves it with his E equals MC squared formula, which states that matter comes from light, and it will resolve back into light. So they started saying to themselves, well, wow, if the most fundamental level of reality is intelligent light waves, then reality has to look very different from what we believe it to be, and there must be another dimension of existence out there, which ancient philosophers and people like Carl Jung described as an archetypical dimension, where these organized waves of light patterns form the basis for everything that we know in this physical world. And the human being is kind of like a bridge, kind of like a TV or a camera, a movie camera, where those archetypal images are actually translated from a light energy basis into the appearance of physical reality as we see it. There's a process that goes with that, and it would take me time to describe that a little bit. I'm trying to give you the Reader's Digest version here for sake of time. But essentially, that means human beings are a very important bridge between spirit and matter, and taking these light images and converting them into what we believe to be the material world.
So I'm curious, Peter, when you say we're an important bridge, it boggles my mind. Like, it just seems kind of silly to me that if there is this other dimension where everything is great and wonderful and we know everything, why are we even here? Like, what's the point in this TV land?
Well, it really gets down to the whole way that creation came about, because the paradox is, when we talk about the one consciousness projecting itself out into multiple points of consciousness, the paradox is that it pushed itself outward by contracting itself inward. So essentially, what the one consciousness did was it limited its own consciousness of wholeness in various degrees or steps or vibrations. And that limitation of consciousness is what creates individual conscious expression. Because think of it for a second. If you were one with the Supreme Consciousness, you wouldn't think of yourself as an individual anymore. You would have the consciousness of the whole within you. In order to think of yourself as an individual, you have to have a certain limited consciousness that allows you to think of yourself as an individual, because you can't see the whole. So it's this sort of ignorance or forgetting that allows the whole idea of individual life or individual identity to exist in the first place. The price we pay for the perception of individual identity is a certain degree of ignorance or lack of consciousness of the whole. And our whole purpose here is to go through a growth pattern where we can experience, we're spirits having a material, a human experience, not humans having a material experience. And our purpose is really to spiritualize the material and bring the experience of the material back to the spiritual. And we do that by living what we think of sometimes as these suffering or mundane lives here. But we go through individual experience, and over a period of lifetimes, we bring that consciousness of what it was like to be an individual back to the spiritual realm, back to the whole. So to sum it up, you can say that the purpose of us being here is God trying to experience itself in different forms of existence.
Okay, cool. So it kind of makes me think of like games where you're like virtual reality, where you're pretending to be someone else on the computer.
There you go. There you go. I often use in my presentations an example of the holodeck in Star Trek. And I say, you know, you have the crew and they make up the programs and they go into these worlds and they interact with people who appear to be people. They appear to be individuals who aren't conscious of being part of the holographic process. And we're kind of like programmers that forgot our own program. So we get immersed in this whole dimension of what we think of reality, which is really a giant holographic projection of another dimension that we are down here. And we think that this is real. Our focus is here, and our consciousness is here, and we think that this is really what it is. But we've kind of lost the consciousness of being the movie projectors or the program that's playing.
Awesome. Well, I want to put out your website again, popeannalisa.com, because you do speaking engagements and all of that as well, right?
Yeah, and I'd like to mention that I'm going to be speaking in Vancouver next week on February 18th, Tuesday, February 18th. I'm a keynote speaker at the Center for Spiritual Living National Convention, which is at the Fairmont Hotel on 900 West Georgia Street. I'm speaking at 1:30, and I believe that that is open to the public. If you get in touch with the Centers for Spiritual Living in Vancouver, they can probably tell you how to purchase tickets, and I'll be the keynote speaker there.
Cool. Awesome. I was probably sent that information, but I have so many emails coming my way. I apologize that you had to mention it. Thank you. So again, that's Tuesday, February 18th, 1:30 p.m. at which Fairmont Hotel?
At the Fairmont Hotel on 900 West Georgia Street.
Okay. Hotel Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that's with the Center for Spiritual Living. So if you Google that and Google Peter Canova, you should be able to find it. And your website, again, is popeannalisa.com. So I want to bring it back. It's interesting. I'd like to talk about the divine feminine. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Pope Annalisa, that's a very, I mean, it almost sounds contrary because a woman has never been pope before.
Right.
And it's also really timely because Pope Benedict has now given his resignation.
I'm going to tell you a very interesting story around the development of this book that relates to the Pope Benedict incident. I started this novel over a decade ago because I was still an international businessman, hotel developer, and I didn't have a lot of time, so I would just write little bits and pieces of it on long airplane rides or whenever I had some downtime at an airport. And the first draft of my book had a second, it was set against the backdrop of a second Gulf War against the Hussein family, Saddam Hussein's sons, and we kind of know what happened, you know, with that little bit of history. And so when that occurred a couple years later, I said, well, you know, this is already a dated storyline, I better change it. So I changed it to Iran acquiring nuclear weapons and becoming a threat in the Middle East. And then we know what happened with Iran. And so I said, well, you know, I'm not going to change the storyline this time. So the Iranian nuclear storyline kept in there. But in the book, the opening scenes of the book, some very militant cardinals are trying to get an ailing pope who has a heart condition to resign, to be the first pope in 600 years to resign. The pope doesn't do that, but he ends up passing away from a heart attack. And it's after that that Annalisa becomes pope. But it's rather interesting that the headlines today, I was looking, I think, on, I know it was Fox on the internet, was first pope to resign for 600 years, heart ailment. So, you know, the people have noted consistently over the years how this book had really kind of predicted a lot of geopolitical events that was happening, and this whole resignation of the first pope in 600 years to do so over a heart condition, you know, was just sort of the latest little anecdote there. But let's talk about the sacred feminine for a second.
All right.
And I think that you alluded to some other things that had to do with the interplay between sort of the male and female forces. But let's cut through a lot of the fog that surrounds this. And it has a little bit to do with your rant earlier in the program. The sacred feminine is really nothing more than the recognition that God expresses itself in two forms. Yes, there is one energy, but that one energy, in order to propel creation, set up these two polar forces that were called male and female, which sort of underlies everything in the universe. Almost everything in the universe is characterized by the interplay between these forces. So this even reflects in our body structure. You know, we have the left brain, or the male side that they call it, that has to do with function and analysis, analytical thought, breaking things into component parts. The right brain, or the female side, is more like design creativity. It uses holistic thoughts, which looks for the unity in the parts. So the political aspects of this, really, this is not, it has nothing to do with the sacred feminine. Feminism and the sacred feminine are two different things. There has been a lot of anger in feminism, and I think a little bit of lack of objectivity in terms of looking at the bigger picture of how our world has evolved to where it is. And rather than looking at things in Darwinian terms, I always look at things in spiritual terms. There was a point where consciousness descended from another dimension into physical form. It became entangled in human bodies. And very early in prehistory, our ancestors, who were closer to the source of that consciousness, would have viewed the world very differently from the way that we did. The consciousness that descended was always described as a feminine consciousness. It was always the female face of God in almost every culture that led the fall from the consciousness of the higher realms into the consciousness of the lower or material realms. And we would have been much closer to this feminine consciousness back then, which would have been much more intuitive, much more in tune with the pulsations and the rhythms of the earth. And the world would have almost been magical for these early ancestors of ours. But now what happens? Consciousness is now not free to roam the universe anymore. This consciousness became entangled in a physical body, and it started to identify with the physical body. So what happens with a physical body? Well, you got saber-toothed tigers who are chasing our ancestors around for lunch. You have harsh climatic conditions. They had the need to gather food and to hunt and feed themselves. So they had to develop a more sort of left brain or male strategy for analyzing and surviving in the world and dominating the environment. And we did that over thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years. We did that. We gotten to the point where we're so successful right now that we're practically destroying ourselves with that type of consciousness. What I really see happening, and this is a whole other story in itself of how this book developed, but what I really see becoming very prominent in 2012 is a recycling of this feminine energy, where people are becoming more intuitive, they're becoming more imaginative, they're becoming more creative, and they're incorporating that into their everyday lives in ways that changes how they go about and do things. And I'll give you a very quick anecdote, because you can't really graph the growth of consciousness in a human mind. That's pretty tough to do. But you can see footprints of that change in consciousness. When I was starting out getting involved in spiritual or holistic matters, I used to go to the conferences like the early Whole Life Expos in Los Angeles or Pasadena back in the 80s and the 90s. And at that time, if there were 300 people in the room, it would have been 299 women and me, because guys just didn't do that type of stuff. That was just totally alien to their way of thinking. Now I speak at these conferences, and I can tell you it's almost a 50-50 split every single place I go. Yeah, the change is remarkable. It shifted from almost an exclusively you know, feminine sort of attendance in these conferences to a nearly 50-50 split right now. And I think that's kind of the hallmark of where things are going in this evolution.
Awesome. Well, I'm curious, because I kind of have this impression of the feminist movement as being quite a masculine energy. And when you mention how men now are coming to the spiritual events, I think that's awesome. And then it also brings up the question, a lot of women now complain that men aren't masculine enough anymore.
Mm. Well, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think for men to experience their feminine side and for females to experience their male side, to get a little bit of a taste and understanding of what that's like, is not necessarily a bad thing. And yeah, there'll be some dislocations along the way and some misguided people, But eventually it all cycles around. It's not a struggle. It's not a battle. It's not like the feminine is rising to replace or supplant the masculine. You can't do that. You can't replace one force of nature with another. They're both forces of nature, and they cycle back and forth like in a spiral. And like I say, in our early history, we were more oriented towards the feminine side. Later history, more oriented, and currently maybe more oriented towards the male side. What's really happening now is a balance that's coming into being. And Jesus was always saying in the Gnostic Gospels, when the two become as one, when the male becomes as female and the female becomes as male, then will you realize the kingdom. What is he saying? He's saying the same thing that psychologists like Maslow and other people talk about when they talk about an actualized or superior human being, which is a person who takes that right and left brain and those energies and brings them into an operating symmetry. We're talking about balanced people here. And you always go through a period of imbalance before you achieve balance. So, I mean, that's what's happening, and sometimes I think we make too big a deal of it, but we'll get there.
Thank you. Awesome. Well, now I'm curious, what do you feel is like the most important thing that you want people to either get from Pope Annalisa or the attitude that you want them to approach the book with?
I think the message that I would like to convey to people is that we always talk about responsibility now. It's become in vogue to talk about personal responsibility. But the thing that hardly anybody takes personal responsibility for is their own spiritual growth, because they're too busy with other things. And yes, it takes time, and you have to sort of interrupt the flow of your earthly days to maybe sit down for a little while and meditate and contemplate on things. But, you know, I went through a series of very vivid spiritual experiences when I was in my 20s that altered the course of my life and set me on a course from being an international businessman primarily to primarily an author and an inspirational teacher these days. And it happened because I experienced a contact with these other dimensions that we're talking about in ways that always pictured out so that I knew it wasn't my imagination. These things would always come to pass. Some of the anecdotes I told you about, you know, the geopolitical things in the book being predicted and everything was just a manifestation of that. But it just proved to me that there is absolutely another dimension of existence out there. And I felt that I was like a person who was sitting in front of radio most of my life and all I was getting was static. But I kept at it. I kept tuning. I kept turning that dial until finally I hit upon a channel and things came through clear. And I realized that it was always out there broadcasting 24/7. It was me that had to attune myself to that. And that once I did, it was a real transformative experience in my life. I want to help people and encourage people and inspire people to let them know that there is a payoff at the end of the day for studying and understanding these matters, and that they too can get to the point where they can contact this information and they too can transform their own lives much for the better. And if I can do that through an understanding, helping them with an understanding from the scientific side and from the spiritual side, so we get both that left brain and right brain working, we get the heart and the mind, the analysis and the imagination working together to tell us the same picture, that's an inspirational story. Can you imagine when people really understand that the most advanced sciences and the oldest spiritual traditions are telling us the same thing about the nature of reality and our place in that reality? It's a very exciting thing when people realize that, and it really encourages them to move on with their lives.
Awesome. So I'm curious, Peter, did you seek out, you were a businessman, so did you just decide one day, I want to start meditating more, or was it something that happened to you that forced you to question your reality?
I think in certain people, there's an innate desire, maybe from past life experience, accumulation of past life experiences. I don't really know exactly what to ascribe it to, but from the time I was younger, I always felt some sense of alienation, that there was something else going on in the world and that what I was seeing couldn't be what it was all about. So I had a real desire to understand the bigger picture of things. And when I saw an advertisement in the paper by a group that was working to sort of enhance what they would have called psychic abilities or ESP back in those days, I kind of picked up on that. And within really short order, I found out that I was an accurate medical intuitive. Someone would just give me the name, age, and address of a person. Doesn't matter where they were, how far away they were. All I needed was name, age, and address, and I could zero in on them, and I could see their physical, mental, or emotional problems quite accurately. And when I got over the disbelief of what I was doing and I just let the intuition flow, it opened up an incredible series of experiences in my life that were startling and led me to a different perception of what the world is about. So in my case, I could say that there was just something inside me that kept kicking at me and probably leading me by the nose in this direction. Other people, maybe, you know, they'll come to that in different ways, by different paths. Who knows? There's thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of ways that people can, you know, start on this journey. But maybe, you know, maybe that's some of my contribution. Maybe those people sitting out in the audience listening to my presentation will say, wow, I got to really look into this more. And maybe that's the beginning of their journey.
Awesome. Well, it's time for a break. So we'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment. We're speaking with Peter Canova, and he is speaking at the Hotel Vancouver on Tuesday, February 18th at 1:30. He's the keynote speaker, and that is being put on by the Center for Spiritual Living. So you can Google them, and his name is Peter Canova, C-A-N-O-V-A. His website is popeanalisa.com, and this is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we'll be back very soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Does anybody know where he's from?
From parts unknown.
My name's Chris Horrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is without question the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it Monday
from 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
The Parts Unknown!
Break your fingers!
Rosemary Brown was elected to the provincial legislature of British Columbia in 1972, becoming the first black woman in Canadian history to be a member of the Canadian parliamentary body. Rosemary served in the BC legislature until 1986, when she became a professor in women's studies at Simon Fraser University. A determined feminist, Miss Brown worked throughout her life to promote equality and human rights. Rosemary's dedicated community service won her a multitude of honors, including selection as an officer of the Order of Canada.
This PSA was brought to you in support of Black History Month on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and you can find my website at spiritualshow.com. I'm also on Twitter and Facebook, where there's an argument going on right now about my rant about the 1 billion rising. So if you want to go there and argue with everyone, go ahead. Facebook.com/spiritualshow. And welcome back to the show, Peter.
Thank you.
Hi, and your website again is popeanalisa.com. And oh, coming up in just a few minutes here on CITR is Parts Unknown, so stick around for that. And can we talk about the movie? Because
sure.
It's going to be made into a movie.
Yeah, and again, I think that this is another demonstration of this recycling of a feminine consciousness that's coming about, because I don't think even a year ago, kind of a genre-bending novel like Pope Annalisa would have been given much, credence in Hollywood. But during the course of 2012, I joined and started speaking with a major group called the Global Alliance for Transformational Entertainment. And that group was founded by Jim Carrey and Eckhart Tolle and another gentleman I know named John Rotz. And the purpose of GATE is exactly what the title implies. It's trying to introduce consciousness into the visual arts, which have been pretty dismal in terms of, you know, the lopsidedness of the violence and everything else that goes on in the movie and the entertainment industry. But I started becoming affiliated with that organization. And just before that, from out of nowhere, started getting all these inquiries out of Hollywood from actors and producers and everything who had somehow gotten a hold of the book and were expressing an interest in making a film out of it. Well, I through a combination of circumstances, I came across a couple young guys who are executives over at Phoenix Pictures, which is a monster production company. They're winding down now. The founder, Mike Medavoy, who's like a Hollywood legend, is kind of going off in his own ways. But the executives over there are, you know, kind of carrying on. And they really loved the book, and we had some discussions, and we signed a deal, and I'm co-producing. Rather than selling the script, which a lot of people do because I was afraid I'd lose artistic control, I negotiated a deal where we're actually co-producing. So I'm co-writing the script, and we, the three of us, make all the decisions on how to proceed with the film development and so forth. So it's kind of exciting. It's a long process, and it's a risky process because an epic movie like this, you're probably talking about a $60 million budget at least. So when that kind of money enters into it, it always makes things a little thorny. But, you know, again, I have a lot of faith in the message of the book and how people react to it. And so I think we'll get the job done.
Cool. So do you think that movies, I mean, Avatar was like a pretty big one. Do you think that mm-hmm. paved the way?
You could sort of see little hints of consciousness in movies. You can even go back to Star Wars and The Force Be With You and so forth, which is kind of an expression of consciousness. And Avatar certainly showed that you can embed, I think, a spiritual message in a movie and make it a big popular hit movie. This book is more upfront about the spirituality. But I think what people really love about this is that it's very historical. I mean, this isn't a fantasy book. Everything is historically based. It talks about the original teachings of Christianity, which are very different from the version of Christianity, Judeo-Christianity, that we've been handed down. And it goes into a lot of factual stuff, which seems fantastic, but it's right out there that the evidence and things are out there. So I think people really love the historicity plus the sort of magical quality of the book in terms of how it deals with the characters. And the book, incidentally, is part of a trilogy, and it's called the First Souls Trilogy. And the First Souls are those cardinal souls that first fell into material experience. They were the first souls to incarnate in physical bodies. And the trilogy traces their lives over different epochs of history. But their story is our story. It's the story about the origin, destiny, and purpose of humanity. And I think people really identify with these characters. So the spiritual lessons are learned through identification with the characters and the enjoyment of seeing these almost like living and breathing characters in there, as opposed to kind of like a dry sort of scholarly, you know, type of expose.
Awesome. I usually focus on nonfiction on this show, but it is really, it's a nice break to be able to just absorb yourself and just lose yourself in a book and be learning without actively trying to learn.
I was on another radio show recently with the one of the judges and the founder of the Nautilus Awards, and I learned some information that I hadn't even known before when I won the book about 18 months ago. Apparently, Pope Annalisa is one of the very few fiction books that ever made it to the gold. Most of their books are you know, of a non-fiction variety, and they always felt that it was almost too hard for a book to sort of demonstrate the visionary or spiritual principles in a fictional form and be well written and entertaining and have good character development and so forth. And I guess Pope Annalisa was one of the very few books that that award was given to. And I'm proud of that award because they have a very, very rigorous judging method. You have to pass three different panels of judges on your book. It's not like you know one panel of judges reads it and you get like a, you know, gold, silver, or bronze medal. You have to pass through three different panels of judges in order to get any kind of award. So I was very happy with that award.
Well, congratulations on that. And
thank you.
I just have a few minutes left in the show because I have Davy Ward on the line, and she's going to talk about her new exciting tantra stuff that's going on. So I just want to ask you if there's anything else that you want to leave us with before we close the show.
I just think that what I said earlier about people doing their own research and their investigation into things, it all begins with a desire. Everybody in this life has suffering attached to it, and we experience different types of tragedies, loss of loved ones, loss of health, loss of home. So many different things impact us. And when somebody usually gets to the point where they can't go on anymore, they start to turn their face elsewhere, and they say there's got to be more than this. Many people get locked into traditional forms like fundamental Christianity, and I'm not here to criticize fundamental Christianity at all. I believe that every expression of spirit is valid in its own way. But what I would say to people is that when you do finally get to the point where you feel that you're ready to have some investigation into higher questions of life, that you keep a very open mind and you look at different traditions and you look at different possibilities. And it's like that highway that we talked about before. Don't get stuck in one bus stop. You know, continue your journey on the road, because there's still gold at the end of that rainbow. And it may take this lifetime, several lifetimes to achieve it. But the point is that you're working your way up. And I think that's the most important thing in life, that we move forward in some form.
Thank you so much, Peter. And again, you are going to be at the Hotel Vancouver. This is an event being put on by Center for Spiritual Living, Tuesday, February 18th at 1:30 p.m. You're the keynote speaker. So is this a day-long event?
Yeah, it is. They have several different things going on there. I'm not aware of the full program. Of course, a lot of it is for, there'll be a lot of the ministers from the Religious Science or Center for Spiritual Living there, but there's also a lot of people who aren't. There's people who are just there sort of for, well, I guess, you know, the spiritual experience of it. So I would, you know, really encourage anybody that wants to hear more, because I go into great depth about many of the things that we've been talking about in my keynote address. And if anybody happens to be in the locale there in Vancouver or in the area, I think you'd find it a very rewarding experience. And if you do come off of this radio show, please identify yourself and let me know, and it'd be great to see you. And one more thing, let me ask you, give me your Facebook address again so I'll make sure that I check the radio show out.
Cool. It's facebook.com/spiritualshow. That's like, you can become my friend there.
Okay.
And the radio show has its own page, Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. What are you on Facebook?
I am. I'm under Pope Annalisa and Peter Canova.
Okay. I will look you up.
Okay, great.
All right. Well thank you so much.
I really enjoyed it.
Take care. Thank you. Bye, Peter. Again, you can find Peter Canova at popeannalisa.com. So now we have Davy Ward on the line. I hope she's still there. Davy, are you still there? Oh, I just dropped her. Okay, Davy, please call back right away. We'll be back with more synchronicity in a moment.
But the hardcore stuff is just is fast, very aggressive and loud, you know, music, angry music.
All right, we have Davy on the line now. Hi, Davy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Marie. Thanks for having me back.
Sorry I hung up on you. So rude of me.
Yeah, it's okay. You never know with cell phones. You never know if it's the cell phone or something else.
No, it was me. So tell us what's going on in the world of Tantra.
Yay. Well, February 23rd, which I think is next Saturday, so it's coming on up, we have a Better Love and Sex for Women workshop in Vancouver. And this is a Tantra for Women workshop. It's only going to be us girls for the whole day, talking about how to enhance intimacy and pleasure and sexual connection and 11 different orgasms for women and how to communicate with your partner and just really, really enhance our sexual experience on every level. So it's going to be really fun and really exciting, and everything's taught fully clothed, so you're not going to have to be naked in front of a bunch of people that you don't know. And all of the genital methods are taught on anatomical models. So it's very safe and it's very fun and it's very practical.
Awesome. Okay. Well, since I have you on the line for another 5 minutes, tell us again your website, please.
Oh, yeah. My website is Feminine Emergence, or that's where this website is, or this workshop is actually listed, is on Feminine Emergence. So just go feminineemergence.com. Also, Tantric Arts of Love, you can learn more about me there. The best thing that I found to have people do is just Google my name, Davy Ward, because I've got like four websites. And so if you just Google my name, all my websites pop up and you can just go cruising around.
Awesome. And so you have the workshop and you also have workshops online for people who can't make it to a live event. I did watch some of those. And they were very interesting.
And you liked them? Yeah, good.
I did. Well, there was one. I mean, there were some things that I knew already. And there was one move that I learned that I was sort of already doing. But then when I watched the video, I made more effort to use that move because it was very appreciated.
Amen. So, all right. Yeah. There you go.
So it's definitely good. I noticed actually though that it seemed almost more like it was about pleasing the men in some aspects than the woman.
You mean which one did you watch? Because we've got four courses. So we've got one that's specifically vulva massage for women. We've got one that's the art of male pleasuring. We've got one that's semen retention for men. And then there's one that's called intimacy essentials, which is how to enhance and increase your intimate connection before you even make love. So which one were you referring to?
I'm not sure, but there was one where it seemed there was more emphasis on... it's hard to talk about this on the radio. Fellatio rather than the other option. I'm trying to be polite.
You know, that's probably just because you were watching that particular course material, because we do cover all the bases. There's four individual courses, and so each one is specific. So there is one that's specific for fellatio. That's one course. But then there's one that's specific for cunnilingus.
Okay, so there is. Okay, I sort of saw it and I didn't, I only had part of the puzzle, which is just what we were talking about earlier in the show. So I guess I just had the one part of that puzzle and I didn't watch the other one for cunnilingus. So yeah, daytime.
There you
daytime
go.
Talk.
You gotta eat all the pieces of the pie.
Okay. So Davy Ward, again, when is that workshop?
It is February 23rd from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. And we actually, we have an early registration deadline that ends tonight at midnight Pacific Standard Time. So if you go to the website, feminineemergence.com, and register, you get a special early bird discount price.
Wonderful. Well, Davy, it has been such a pleasure talking to you, and you're just doing so much wonderful work in the world. Is there anything you want to add before we say goodbye? And happy Valentine's Day to you.
Happy Valentine's Day to you too. And I would add for you, Marie, because I know that you've got access. I think you've got access to all of the material. Definitely check out the other course and check out the pleasuring for women, because I think you'll get a lot out of it.
Okay, yeah, I have a whole bunch of other questions that came up, but they're not really appropriate to ask you on the air, so so maybe we'll go for coffee one day or something. Yeah. Okay, well, it was wonderful talking to you. Take care and happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Davy. So that was Davy Ward, D-E-V-I Ward. You can Google her and find that that workshop. So thank you so much for being with me. I just want to send lots of love to you this Family Day and lots of love for Valentine's Day. And whether you're single or in a partnership of some kind, remind you to give yourself lots of self-love as well. So I will be back next week. Take care. I love you so much. Be well. Namaste.
Rosemary Brown was elected to the provincial legislature of British Columbia in 1972, becoming the first black woman in Canadian history to be a member of the Canadian parliamentary body. Rosemary served in the BC legislature until 1986, when she became a professor in